This seems to be Orchestra Week in our area and also Brahms Week. The University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is performing this third symphony of Brahms on Friday night, along with music by John Stevens for tuba and orchestra, and also an overture of Giuseppe Verdi. Tonight at the Krannert Center in Urbana, the Sao Paulo State Symphony Orchestra is performing the second symphony of Brahms, also music by Camargo Guarnieri, and some music as well featuring the wonderful percussionist Evelyn Glennie. And then also on the weekend, there's the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, not doing Brahms, I don't think, on Saturday. And then the Moscow Chamber Orchestra, Kremlin, is performing in Charleston on Sunday. So lots of opportunities to hear some very different orchestral ensembles, large and small. And the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, no slouch. We've got two of their representatives with us for the first part of today's program, and then we'll be speaking with the touring conductor with the Sao Paulo Orchestra, Kazim Abdallah, who is a young American conductor, all of 30, and that's in the later portion of the show today on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the, why was I going to say harpsichord? Percussion virtuoso Dame Evelyn Glennie performing with the Black Dyke Band in England. Music by Rudy Starita called Rudy's Rambles, and playing the xylophone there. She is going to be performing tonight at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, a concerto by James McMillan called Veni, Veni, Emmanuel with the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra of Brazil, conducted by Kazim Abdallah. And she is one of the, if not the, absolute world's reigning percussion virtuoso. There's not too many that tour in the first place, and she's been doing it for a very long time. From Scotland, Dame Evelyn Glennie with the Sao Paulo Symphony. Tonight, we'll be speaking with their touring conductor in the later part here of Live and Local on the show today. But the first part, we have two members of the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Aaron Kaplan is one of their cellists. And Genevieve, you know, I didn't even ask how you say your last name.
Noble.
And you might want to pull your microphones a little bit closer, now that I realize I didn't ask you to do that either. Genevieve Noble is a violist with the orchestra. And how did you all get the nod to be doing this in the first place?
Well, I've done some marketing stuff in the past for the orchestra. And Professor Schleicher just asked me if it was something I was interested in, and I jumped at the opportunity.
And also, you're a conductor, and conductors need to learn to communicate with their public, right?
That is very true as well.
not only with the stick and communicating with the orchestra verbally, but also it does fall on one to go out and talk to people quite a bit. But that doesn't fall on violists too often, Genevieve. You got this nod in an accidental way, apparently.
I happen to be sitting in the right place at the right time. And Schleicher was talking to Aaron about it and just threw me into the mix, and I'm glad that I was sitting there to have this opportunity.
I'm glad that you're glad, because other people could have thought you were in the right place at the wrong time and been thrown into the fire here, but we'll try to make it nice and comfortable for you. Schleicher is Donald Schleicher, who's the music director of University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra. He's been there for quite a while and has done really wonderful things with the orchestra. Either or both of you, give me an idea of some of the interactions maybe that might be typical between Professor Schleicher and the orchestra, either collectively or individually. What maybe some of the idiosyncrasies that help make the communication what it is between you?
I think most of the communication from Schleicher is nonverbal and done with conducting, but a lot of the communication that we do have is very professional, and it's one of the most professional student ensembles I've ever been in, and he puts a lot of emphasis on what it's like to have orchestral etiquette. And
For example,
when we're playing a specific piece of music, he'll say, "This is a really big bassoon excerpt," or such. He'll tell little vignettes about composers and famous conductors that he's met that have also conducted the piece that we're doing, and historical information.
But I'm also thinking about, you were talking about orchestral etiquette. What do you mean by that?
Well, an example of that is if someone in the section has a question, and usually he'll address this sort of topic on the first rehearsal, but, you know, he makes us aware that if you have a question in this section, it goes through the principal, and then the principal relays that to the conductor. So just certain things like no yawning in rehearsal, and just things that enhance our professional orchestral education that, you know, we'll all have to learn before we get out there and hopefully land a job in a situation like that.
And is that something that he has to constantly remind students about, or once he lays that down, people catch on pretty quickly?
He usually puts a disclaimer in front of things that he feels are very important and says, "It's the first rehearsal, and I plan on telling you this once." Things like tuning quietly. He's definitely a fan of that, and it's also something that string players especially should do, since there are so many of us in an orchestra.
Tune quietly instead of hear the tuning A and then just start blasting away? Is that the opposite?
Yeah. You know, when you hear the tuning A, if everyone starts, you know, digging in on the string at once, it's really hard to hear yourself. So, you know, starting at the tip very softly, and also it's, it doesn't create quite a distraction to the audience. You know, it's a nice tuning sound, just very softly, and keeping it to yourself.
What other kinds of would you call them Schleicherisms that you hear?
Usually for each piece that we're playing, especially the major works such as the Brahms for this concert, he'll have little anecdotes for each composer. For example, a quote that we've heard him say, you know, almost every rehearsal this concert cycle is, you know, in Brahms, every note is so important. Or, you know, in Brahms, you know, it's all about the harmony. Or a comment about the dynamics. Just, again, I would call them Schleicherisms for each piece that we have. And so an example, like in this Brahms, you know, he's talked about how this is the one symphony that Brahms continued to work with and continued to reorchestrate after it was premiered, and that every note is very specific for that instrument, and a lot of thought was put into it. So every note is really important.
Every note, every hairpin, every dynamic, mm-hmm. accent, sforzando, anything. Painstaking hours went into creating this music, so he puts emphasis on how we should also put in painstaking hours to recreate it to what Brahms intended.
And hairpin, for those who are not clued into the lingo, is actually a crescendo mark or a decrescendo mark. And it kind of looks, I guess, could be said to look like a hairpin. Do people
still
wear hairpins?
I don't see the resemblance.
No, I mean, not really. Does anybody even wear hairpins anymore? I don't know.
If that is synonymous with bobby pin, then yes, but I'm actually unclear on the definition of hairpin.
I suspect so, but I'm not. But that could be a very old thing. Something
likely
we just do and don't think about. Yeah. Aaron, you're mm-hmm. also you're in music education, right? Is that your primary?
I am as well.
You both are. Okay.
I'm a double major in music education and performance.
Cello performance.
Cello performance, yes.
And I know that you've done some conducting and are interested in doing more conducting. When you sit in the cello section as a budding conductor, I guess, mm-hmm. What do you think you might see differently than somebody who's just sitting in the cello section having no intention of conducting and they just want to play the cello?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's a great question, and I feel very lucky at the fact in these orchestra rehearsals that I can, as an orchestral musician, I can learn so much, like we already talked about orchestral etiquette and professionalism. But as an aspiring conductor, there's so much you can pick up from rehearsal techniques to just watching his movements and how he'll conduct a passage. I mean, there's so much of our practice time as conductors is not only spent in score study, but observing other conductors and seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work as well. That's where a lot of the learning comes in. And you know, it's such a thrill so that I can get both sides of that coin in rehearsals.
It's a great opportunity if you're studying conducting to be in an orchestra watching Schleicher. It's every movement is so refined and thought out that it's an amazing opportunity just observing.
Are you also in music education? You have to take conducting classes, right?
Yeah, we're actually in the same conducting class right now.
And what's your hope, Genevieve, when you finish up here? What's your goal at the moment?
I don't really know. It's up in the air. I think most musicians say that. I am a music ed student right now, so teaching would be lovely, and hopefully I will get to do that in the future as well as performing.
So maybe conducting, too. Maybe not conducting.
I've definitely thought about it. So, and usually conductors don't really get to that stage until way later. So I think I have a while to think about it.
Oh yeah, I mean you could do like a lot of well-known instrumental performers, and you can decide, well, at age 60, I'm now going to conduct because I've done everything that can be done if you're Itzhak Perlman, for example, or any of a number of other people. We're talking with Genevieve Noble, who is a violist with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and Aaron Kaplan, who is a cellist. And both of you are undergraduates, correct?
Yes.
And what year are you, Genevieve?
I'm a senior.
And I'm a junior.
As a junior with the University of Illinois Symphony. Donald Schleicher is the music director. They're going to be giving a concert Friday night at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at 7:30. The program includes the Third Symphony of Johannes Brahms, from which we will hear an excerpt in a little bit. It also features the professor of tuba at the School of Music at the University of Illinois, Mark Moore, who was actually on this program on Monday. He's going to be playing a large-scale tuba concerto by John Stevens with the orchestra, and then also some music of Giuseppe Verdi, which we will sample in just a moment. Tell me about the tuba concerto.
It's amazing.
From the orchestral point of view.
I get to sit right next to him.
Professor Moore.
Yes, in the orchestra, and I get to see the music when he's playing, and seeing all those notes fly by is just incredible, and how virtuosic the instrument can truly be, and how he plays it so well. It's just a very intricate concerto, very rhythmically driven, and it's so interesting.
Yeah, watching such musical talent that Professor Moore has, it's really inspiring, and it's a very cool piece. It's quite modern. There's a lot of meter changes, especially in the third movement, which I believe is titled High Rollin' Through the Mountains.
High Ballin'
Through the Mountains, and we take it at quite a clip. It is quite fast, and it's kind of like the Rite of Spring, and you know, it changes meter every measure, and those notes really fly. So it's a great thrill, and it's a fun piece. It's harder to put together than some other concertos that we've done, but it's a great experience for us to play a piece by a composer, you know, who's still living. The composer is the professor at University of Wisconsin in Madison, so you know, it's a great experience all around.
It's also great to be able to play with professors at the university. Last year, UISO played with Stefan. I think it was last year.
Stefan Milenkovic is one of the violin professors. Mm-hmm.
And we've played with John Dee, the oboe professor, before. So it's very interesting, especially as a student in orchestral education, to be able to play with these amazing professionals.
Well, and I imagine especially if you happen to be a student of that professor.
Oh, yeah.
Say, if you were the tubist in the orchestra, because there's only one of those, and everybody else gets to experience as a non-direct student of his. But, there's so many wonderful players on faculty, and they probably don't get out as much as would be ideal for students to have more opportunities to go out and hear them playing, inspiring you all.
Yeah, but every time that I've seen one of the School of Music faculty members play with either the UISO or the Champaign Urbana Symphony or Sinfonia de Camera, there's always so much support from their studio who goes along to see that concert. I know the new cello professor Dmitry Kuzov is performing on Saturday, and a lot of his studio is attending. So it's
playing the Shostakovich.
Yes, that's right, the Shostakovich concerto. Cello concerto. But
on Saturday
with Champaign Urbana Symphony.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but it's great not only being in the orchestra, being able to play with one of your professors, but it's also nice to see that there is that that support from the rest of the studio behind you. And yeah, it's a great piece, and it's a lot of fun.
And you're probably required to show up at his recitals, or not.
No.
Maybe not.
it depends on the studio.
Yeah. Sometimes people are. One of the opening piece on the program is by Giuseppe Verdi. Aaron, I know you brought some notes along. What do your notes tell you, or even better, what has Professor Schleicher said about particularly the opening of this overture to Verdi's opera, La Forza del Destino, or The Force of Destiny?
Well, actually, this piece, Professor Schleicher is not conducting this one. This is conducted by a graduate conducting student, Zachary Keratin. And that's a good question. He hasn't mentioned that to us in rehearsal yet, but my guess...
Well, you'll have to ask him now.
Yes.
Put him on the spot, see if he knows. Zach was on
we'll
the program.
We'll get back to you with the information.
Zach was on the program yesterday, and for anybody who's listening, he was playing Baroque violin, so this mm-hmm. is his role as a master's conducting student here.
Mm-hmm. It's a very, obviously, a very well-known overture featured in several prominent pop culture references. It's the La Forza del Destino is the opera translated to The Force of Destiny. So my educated guess to your question would be it would be sort of destiny knocking at the door, fate. It's
blowing quite, down the door, rather.
Just about, yeah.
It's quite a rousing entrance. Some of the notes I have on it, the opera premiered in 1835 in Italian, and oddly enough, I came across some research stating the so-called curse of this opera. Apparently, through its many performances at several different opera companies since 1835, there's been several possibly coincidental curses that people have tried to stay away from. For example, there was one company who did the production, I think, in the late 50s, and the main tenor character role was about to die on stage in the role, and he, in fact, then had a heart attack while singing and fell on the stage and actually, you know, passed away from a heart attack at the time his character was supposed to, and just several interesting coincidences similar to that throughout the years, so... That was kind of interesting to find out.
Have you told this to Zachary?
No, I have not told him yet.
You might not want to.
Yeah, let's not get him worried about this.
Well, here you go. You can hear at least why the music might suggest, if not curses, at least tragedy. We'll hear the beginning part anyway of the Force of Destiny Overture, La Forza del Destino by Giuseppe Verdi. In this performance, we hear the Berlin Philharmonic conducted by Claudio Abbado, who, let the record state, is still alive. So we ended up hearing the whole thing anyway, which is perfectly fine with me, and I imagine with you, the listener. The overture to The Force of Destiny, La Forza del Destino, an opera by Giuseppe Verdi performed by the Berlin Philharmonic conducted by Claudio Abbado. You can hear that as the opening work on the concert by the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday night, conducted by one of the master's students in the School of Music in orchestral conducting, Zachary Keratin. And Donald Schleicher is the music director of the orchestra, and he'll be conducting the rest of the program. Two of the performers in the string section are with us on Live and Local here to this portion of the show. Aaron Kaplan is a junior cellist, and Genevieve Noble is a senior violist in the orchestra. And it was interesting watching their reaction as the overture went along, particularly at the end where they got caught up into the almost the performance aspect of it. You weren't waving your bow arms, but you were just about getting to that point. I gather you like playing that piece.
It's fast and fun.
Yeah.
Do the two necessarily go together? And fun?
Sure.
Yeah. Sometimes it's fast and hard and requires a lot of practice. But
what I meant was does fast music in general tend to be more fun than slow?
It depends on which key it's written in.
Because some keys can be harder to play than others.
G major is fun.
Yeah, it's harder to play slower music. It takes a certain control that it's harder to master, especially at the younger you are. But I think as an orchestra, we've certainly from the first concert to the last concert, we've become more comfortable with playing movements with slower tempos. And it's definitely different, and it both present different and unique challenges.
How much do you work on orchestral music with your private teachers? Because you've got Mr. Schleicher in the obviously teaching it to you in the orchestra, but then you spend, I presume, at least an hour a week with private teachers on something. Many kinds of things.
I think it's pretty unanimous. We tend to only focus on solo repertoire. And then, of course, we focus on audition music when audition season is happening. So that would be the orchestral part. My professor, Rudolf Hocken, offers a viola excerpt class. So I go to that. And I know that there is also woodwind excerpt classes available, too. So they do a lot of that. I'm not sure what the cello studios do.
What do the cello studios do, Mr. Cellist?
The cello studios, both studios are different. I'm in Professor Brandon Vamos's studio, who's a member of the Pacifica Quartet. And our studio classes tend to be more focused on the solo rep. And I know both of our studios have juries coming up soon. So mock juries are now becoming a big part of our studio class, and I'm not sure what the other cello studio does.
Well, how do this is a question then for you both. How do you prepare music for orchestra, since obviously you've got to spend time on it mm-hmm. when you're not in rehearsal, without having the support of the teachers? I mean, you have to just sort of figure everything out on your own.
Recordings. Definitely.
But they don't teach you how to play it technically or how to get around certain problems.
That's true. Musically speaking, how parts fit together in a piece, we get that from recordings. Then Schleicher gives us instruction during the rehearsal. And then also for most concerts, we have sectionals, which is the principal of said section leads this sectional and teaches all the technical struggles that we would have to the section. And Schleicher actually leads the winds in their sectional.
The winds and brass?
I believe it's the entire wind section.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, what's your approach to that? I mean, how do you deal with it when you're a young student trying to figure out how to play the cello in the first place, and as you go along, and then you're faced with some pretty incredible difficulties in a lot of orchestral music?
Sure. Well, a lot of that practice time will come from just our own personal private practice time in the practice rooms, and a lot of it comes also from our principal. Mostly for the strings, our principals are very open and are always offering different bowings or technical passage help, and usually in the practice rooms there's usually someone, in my case another cellist somewhere, who's practicing, and it's very we're very welcoming section
community.
Yeah. And we a lot of times bounce ideas off of each other, but a lot of it is very an individualized basis, and we have to you know, practice or orchestra music on our time.
And figure out the problems on your own.
Yeah. And Genevieve is actually the principal violist of the section for this concert. So she has, she's been spending a lot of time figuring out those passages so she can...
Definitely. I have about 7 recordings of the Brahms.
So the Brahms, in this case, since we haven't said much about it so far, and it's the biggest work on the program, is the 3rd symphony of Brahms. As I mentioned at the outset of the show, there's the 2nd symphony on tonight's concert by the Sao Paulo Symphony from Brazil. We'll be talking with their conductor in a little bit yet this half hour. What can you say about Brahms in about a minute?
In about a minute.
I mean, can you even say what is special to you about the 3rd symphony?
Well, about Brahms. Brahms, in relation to his symphonic works, he spent a lot of time writing his symphonies, and he took a while in his entire musical career to actually publish these. It took him about 20-25 years to do the 1st symphony. He was sketching it for a long time, and he actually wrote it rather late in his career in comparison to other composers, such as Mozart, wrote theirs at 8 years old, Mendelssohn 18, and Brahms 43. So just everything is very well thought out and specific and
hard for string players.
Yes,
definitely. Brahms really likes to utilize the strings, and it's actually emotionally exhausting to play an entire Brahms symphony. I'm sure that many other string players would agree with that statement. It's just intense emotion after other intense emotion. So, yeah.
Are you able to say it all? Sorry, Aaron. Are you able to say it all? What makes some of the string parts so difficult? Because even when you hear among the world's best in recording on some of the Brahms symphonies, they still sound out of tune on Brahms. Or they still sound like they're having problems with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was going to mention something similar as well. With Brahms, I say one of the biggest challenges is balance and texture. Brahms is all about texture. And I was studying some of the 3rd movement of this 3rd symphony last night. Obviously, it opens with a very famous cello orchestral excerpt, but it's really interesting to see what the rest of the strings are doing under that the cello melody. The second violins and first violins and violas are kind of alternating on this 16th note triplet rhythm and kind
violas
of a dialogue.
Violas actually have duple.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But keep studying, Aaron.
Yeah, that's right. But there's this a lot of dialogue, and they're 16th note triplets. I know the firsts have, and it's, you know, it's hard to play and hard to get all those notes in tune. And it's just texture. It's so rich and such a depth to the texture. It's hard to master.
At the same time, Brahms was a great orchestrator by this point, especially by his 3rd symphony. So he writes these things, and in the higher strings, which, you know, you think the register would maybe drown out a cello solo, but he writes them in such a way that it's this overlaying sort of shimmery sound that comes from the upper strings that accompanies the lower.
As I mentioned earlier in the program, this is the one symphony that Brahms, after its premiere in 1884, he kept going back to the symphony and reorchestrating some things, always changing it to make it to his idea of near perfection. So obviously, like Jen stated earlier, a lot of time and work was put into making this symphony in particular perfect and in his eyes. So,
well, the audience that attends your concert on Friday night will get to hear how perfect the University of Illinois Orchestra has made this most perfect piece of his. Or I don't know if it is or not, but certainly one of the wonders of Johannes Brahms's pen. The 3rd symphony, along with an overture of Verdi and the John Stevens Tuba Concerto. Friday night, 7:30, at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Don Schleicher conducting, along with master's student Zachary Caratine. And this discussion on Live and Local is with Aaron
Kaplan.
Kaplan. Sorry, I'm going through all the Aarons suddenly that I know, and every one of them I knew was the wrong name. Aaron Kaplan, the cellist, and Genevieve Noble, violist in the orchestra. Appreciate your coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
Have a great concert.
Thank you.
It's from the third movement of the Third Symphony of Johannes Brahms. This performance by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Nicholas Harnoncourt, and a complete performance on Friday night by the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. You can also hear the Second Symphony of Brahms in its entirety tonight at 7:30, also at the Krannert Center in Urbana, but performed by a visiting orchestra, part of their marquee series, the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra of, Sao Paulo State Symphony Orchestra of Brazil. The program will feature as soloist Dame Evelyn Glennie, the wonderful percussionist from Scotland, in music by James McMillan. The conductor is a guest. They recently lost their music director, who went on to other things, and Maestro Kazim Abdallah is actually all of 30 years old. He's Ohio-born, American conductor. He has spent some time with the Metropolitan Opera, which we will discuss in our conversation, which will air in just a moment, and also went to Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, University of Southern California, spent some time at the Aspen Festival, at the Interlaken Music Camp, and folks who have children who are either in music or have gone through music may well know some of these places. So he's very much a product of the American system. And he is now moving on up in the world and has started off on this tour, which is, I think, only in its second week with the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra. It was last week, I think, that I had an opportunity to talk with Kazim Abdallah about his time with the orchestra and about some of his own experiences. And I asked him to start, since he really got started as a clarinetist and, in fact, has done some soloing with some pretty significant orchestras in this country and elsewhere as a clarinetist, why he chose to pursue conducting instead of just staying a clarinetist.
I always was someone that enjoyed knowing the whole piece. Often if you play in an orchestra, you just master your own part in a particular piece. But I was always someone that, I guess, I always enjoyed knowing what everyone else was doing too. And so, like, anytime I had to play a piece, I would always want a whole score so I would see and know what else was going on in the pieces that I was playing. And for me, that was just really exciting and a lot of fun to sort of see how composers, there's only 12 notes, obviously, at a composer's disposal, but there's such a wide variety of what you can do with orchestration and harmony and everything and all of those sort of things involved with music. And it just made me really excited to see how composers dealt with these issues. So that was sort of what naturally led to me wanting to conduct.
And how did you end up at the Metropolitan Opera? You did an assistantship there, cover conductor, for a few years.
Yes. I ended up at the Metropolitan Opera. Well, I had done lots of different opera, all the way going back to Aspen. That's a passion that I've always have had, and I always would, I always tried to involve myself with opera wherever I was. For example, when I played in the New World Symphony, I did a project with the Florida Grand Opera and their Young Artist Program, and I also worked extensively with the Los Angeles Domingo Thornton Young Artist Program as well. And and I had also worked with Baltimore Opera during the year I went to study conducting at Peabody in Baltimore. And so, you know, I was just always involved with the art form. And once you sort of, I had met and worked with many different people in the field and things like that. And I had worked with Maisha Levine at the Tanglewood Music Center for two seasons. And it was from that and from my prior operatic work and experience that I got to work as an assistant at the Met.
And what does it mean to be an assistant at the Met and a cover conductor at the Met?
Well, what it means is that I prepare the cover cast, because for all of the operas, there's another set of singers that are there as the covers. So they go on in the event a singer gets sick, obviously. And so my duties are to prepare them, to also be on call just in case the conductor is sick, and to help with the preparation of the opera in general, with rehearsals and things of that nature.
And is there ever a chance that you would go on in the event that the conductor got sick?
Yes. I mean, no one ever got sick for a performance, but I did make my Met debut last January. I conducted a couple of performances of Gluck's Orfeo. And and I guess my first time that I guess someone got sick or was late was in a rehearsal context. And Valery Gergiev was to do a rehearsal, and he was stuck in London or in Russia. I'm not sure where he was stuck, but he had to come late, and so I had to take over one of his rehearsals with the orchestra. And this was a couple of years ago, I think. So, I mean, that was the only time during my time working there that someone got sick where I had to take over.
So when something like that happens, does the marketing machine start churning and they say, oh, this young conductor is suddenly taking over for the indisposed whoever, and newspaper critics flock to see this new young conductor? Does anything like that go on as far as you know?
No, nothing like that went on with me. I know that kind of story happens, but mine was pretty uneventful. I mean, like, basically, that's my job. I'm supposed to be prepared and ready to take over. So,
well, you just always hear those stories, like Bernstein and who knows how many other people.
Right.
At the very last minute, they came in, and then everybody was there. Of course, those are for public performances as well. But you had looking at your bio here, it seems that you did have an opportunity of that sort, not at the Met. A short notice performance.
Oh, yes, that's true. At the Tanglewood Music Center, I got the chance to collaborate with Mark Morris on Purcell's Dido and Aeneas, and that was sort of a last-minute thing where the conductor, there was a visa issue or something, and he wasn't able to come to do the performances, and so therefore I had to take over, yeah.
And was that a piece you had been studying at that point, or?
That was actually one of the instances where I had to learn a piece really quickly, So that was actually sort of a last minute thing.
And how fast is really quickly?
I guess in that particular case, I remember basically a day. Basically a day, actually, yeah, because I remember, I was called and asked to come to Tanglewood early because the conductor wasn't going to be able to make it to the rehearsal, and so they asked that I actually come early, and so basically I did as soon as they told me, and I sort of learned it on a bus ride from New York to Tanglewood.
So, which is... pretty incredibly fast learning for an opera, even a Baroque opera.
Yeah.
What would be more of a normal period of time to learn, say, an average opera, whatever an average opera
is? I guess the average time, you know, it's different for every piece. It really is different for every piece. For instance, it really is different for every piece, so I can't just say, okay, it takes me a month to learn something, or it takes this long. It just depends on how I absorb the music, and to sort of discover what the composer's idiosyncrasies are, and But, I mean, for example, like, if you look at one of Wagner's ring operas, like Valkyrie, for example, I would probably say the average probably about a month per act, and there's three acts, so I would say about 3 months. But that's just, yeah, like, but I would say that the way that I study and learn, it sort of is in stages and in levels. So, like, there sort of is one, yeah, like, I mean, there's, like, the initial learning of it. And then once you've initially learned it, then you have to go back over it and then look at everything in context, and so I find like you, I find I constantly have to study and restudy works so that my understanding of the musical content and the theatrical content of the opera is, deep and thorough. So, I mean, but that was just one example. Like, oh, yeah, I would probably say for that sort of large-scale opera, like a Wagner opera, I would probably say for me to learn it properly and thoroughly, probably about an act a month.
That's it. And that, of course, as you said, is a very large-scale opera.
Yeah, yeah. So that would just be, yeah, like, you know, like if I were going to say, well, this is the time that is spent on it, that's what I would probably say, but it actually, like, it can be more, it can be less, just depending on the piece and the composer.
And probably what else you're doing at that point.
Right, yes, and what else I'm doing, how much other work I have to do around the studying as well. Yeah, it affects.
So you're now on this tour with the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra. How did you end up on that gig?
Like, you know, a lot of things sort of have to do with timing and being prepared and being sort of at the right place in the right moment. And I'm not sure about all of the inner details about how it came about, but what I do know is that around the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, their former music director, for whatever reason, decided not to continue. I don't know the details involved in that, but they had a U.S. tour booked, and at first I think they were going to cancel it, but then it was decided that they weren't, and they just had to find a replacement conductor, and they've been being advised since the departure of their music director, they've been being advised by two leading figures in the music world. One is Timothy Walker, who is based in London, and then the other is Henry Fogel, who is sort of like he's one of the great music administrators, executive directors in the country. I think he was the longtime executive director of the Chicago Symphony.
Yes.
And he was also the director of the American Symphony Orchestra League, and he was also advising them during this time. And so, also around that time, that was when I made my MET debut, and that went well and things like that. And so, it was just one of those things where just like the timing and the placement, I think, just worked out in the best possible way.
Kazim Abdallah, who is the touring conductor with the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra, which is playing at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30, under his baton and joined by soloist Dame Evelyn Glennie, wonderful percussionist from Scotland. Our program today, Live and Local Today, is made possible in part with support from the Prairie Ensemble, presenting the Deconstructed Orchestra at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, October 24th at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. The eclectic program will include a guest appearance by bandoneon virtuoso Julian Labro in music by Astor Piazzolla. Ticket information is at prairieensemble.org. Our broadcast is made possible also with support from these business partners: Birch Tree Counseling and Consulting of Champaign, Cannon Farm of Camargo, Carpet Weavers of Champaign, and Dick's Pharmacy of Arthur. We appreciate the support of these business partners who join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you. And tomorrow begins our fall pledge period, and you will have the opportunity to become one of the supporters of Live and Local and of our stations here at WYLL, and we hope indeed you will do that. On tomorrow's show from 12 to 1, we will have present and past conductors of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra and one longtime supporter, as they celebrate their 50th anniversary season. Champaign-Urbana Symphony performing on Saturday night, and we'll have a conversation and some archive recordings from them on tomorrow's Live and Local. Here's the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra in an excerpt from a ballet by the Brazilian composer called Francisco Mignone. This is from a piece called Maracatu de Chico Rey, and it's the Dance of the White Princes. The Dance of the White Princes from a piece called Maracatu de Chico Rey. It's a ballet from 1933 by the Brazilian composer Francisco Mignone, played by the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra, led by its former music director, John Neschling. They will perform tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, a program that includes some Brazilian music and the Second Symphony of Johannes Brahms. Program today on Live and Local is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. Artist receptions, interviews with artists, and other special programs are offered to interpret the exhibits. It's going to be cloudy and cold this afternoon. Drizzle or a few lingering showers will be in the works. The high 48. Tonight, cloudy with rain returning overnight. The low 37. Tomorrow, cloudy with periods of rain in the morning and some light showers and drizzle possible in the afternoon with a high of 47. Then Friday, cloudy with a few showers, the high 47. We're at 46 now. News headlines coming up in just a few seconds. This is WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators, W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.